Well, take a look back at a fella known as Riley in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Welcome to this week's Rain Report. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. For a few years until his retirement, FCC Special Enforcement Counsel Riley Hollingsworth, K4RH, was a household name and viewed by many as the man who brought some much-needed law and order to the U.S. amateur radio service. Referred to simply as Riley, this soft-spoken FCC bureaucrat brought a lot of respect back to the FCC that was missing during the 90s. Riley's first forum talk at the Dayton Hamvention in 1999 resulted in this Rain replay.
Thank you. I really appreciate being here. This is my first Dayton Hamfest, and I don't know how I've managed never to get here before, but I know that this is the last day of bargains, and you want to get out there in the lot. I do, and I especially want to get out there before you do. So I decided I'm going to take three approaches to this. I'm going to be short, be sincere, and then be seated. But I want to say I have a lot of empathy for Bill and the crew working on the rulemaking. Working on rulemakings is a killer thing to do. I've worked on one or two, and it makes me tired just thinking about them. There's so many things to consider. You have the Administrative Procedures Act, and you have the possibility of a legal challenge down the road, and you want people to read them that above you and your cohorts that don't know anything about amateur radio, because you get so immersed in these things that you can't see what it really looks like. So you want people to read them and see if it makes sense. But the problem is, a lot of the people that you want to do that are lawyers. And you know, a lawyer reading something is like taking a male dog out for a walk in the morning. You can not give that dog water for a week and it'll still mark everything vertical within half a mile. A lawyer will change ABC to CBA. If it's sent in CBA, they'll change it to ABC. They've got to put some mark on it. So that process takes a long time, but you need it because you need other minds to look at it. So I'll sympathize with you. Better you than me having to do that. Last October when we started this, we decided that we would be as creative and get as crazy as the people we were going to go after. And so we decided to do everything we could think of, not just the revocation hearings and not just one thing or the other. So we started with warning letters. And as I mentioned in the other forums, the reason for that is we noticed that a lot of people that we could apparently go after were long-time licensees, good licensees that were misguided, but they were out there doing what they considered to be self-policing in the amateur bands because the FCC had been missing in action for so long. And we didn't think it made much sense to take the easy way out, designate a lot of revocation hearings, and have a lot of good people lose their licenses that had it not been for our absence or our neglect, they wouldn't have been out there jamming the jammers and so forth. So we've sent out about 150 warning letters to date. And statistically, about 75 or 80% of the situations that we send the warning letter about clear up afterwards. And I noticed, if somebody calls you back after getting a warning letter, the more hell they raise and the more they tell you they're going to sue you, the better chance is you'll never have that problem again after that phone call, because they say it's not them, but the problem goes away. So that's a good indicator to me that we've probably gotten the right person. We've talked to a lot of people one-on-one, and it's a judgment call whether to send a warning letter. If we think it's a one-time or a short-term thing that can be cleared up, we'll do that. And we want them call us back, and sometimes we'll try to call them, because I found that one-on-one reasoning with a lot of these people to get them to understand that we're all in the same boat here. We all have the same thing that we want to enhance and we want to save. Sometimes that turns people around. We do real-time monitoring, and pretty soon we'll be doing that by computer with the dial-up monitoring, I think it's called. But we may not always be taping, but we're always listening various times during the day and evening. I do a lot of it from home, and Laurel does quite a bit of it. And contrary to what some people think, we do use tapes that other amateurs send in, and we use WAV files because we have lots of engineers in the field that are excellent in voice identification techniques. And for some reason, there's a perception out there that we won't use a tape that isn't made by the FCC, and that's not true. In fact, in 80% of the cases we've done so far where we used a tape, or a warning letter resulted or a recall or whatever, they were sent in by amateurs. We have done inspections. We've done about 12 inspections. I've been on a couple of them. The field will now often call me when they're going out on a land mobile or a commercial case and ask if they can do any amateur work in that region or that jurisdiction, which we're glad to see their enthusiasm coming up in the field. Lots of amateurs in the field offices, and that helps. We check into lots of nets, just a brief check-in or a brief check-in to a QSO for a signal report, just to let people know the FCC's there. We've done a number of Section 316 modifications. Section 316 of the Act and the comparable Part 97 rule says that you can modify a license and there's a 30-day protest period. So in some cases, and the most prominent examples are repeater interference cases, and especially works well in a highly urbanized area where you have a repeater jammer. And we'd modify that license for HF only. And in an urban area, especially on the 32nd floor of an apartment building, usually having to operate HF more or less kills the amateur operation of that person for a while. We use anything we think that will work. If a renewal date is coming up, we can designate it for a hearing, or we can grant the renewal for short term. We did that a lot in the commercial service and always worked. Grant a renewal for 6 months or a year, even 3 months. And that means that we get to look at that again very quickly. And always remember that in a renewal proceeding, the licensee has the burden of proof. And that means we can ask you to show us why we should renew your license, and we'll show you what evidence we have. And it's a pretty hard road, or will be in some of these cases. If it's malicious interference and it's done from a company vehicle, we're going to go straight to the employer, to the company. And especially if it's done on company premises, as we have in New Jersey, we'll go straight to that company. They usually are not very tolerant of any type of federal rules violations on their premises. That works pretty well. We've issued a lot of fines, a surprising number. I didn't think it would be that number, but it seems like every time the field has gone out here lately looking for something, they found it. And you remember a few years ago, you heard that, and I'll use this call sign because I get these calls all the time, the WB2OTK case got a large forfeiture, and the word is out on the band that it was ignored and never paid. Well, it wasn't really. It was a large forfeiture, but during that same period of time, I think it was a cable TV association that challenged the commission's method of calculating fees across the board. And that is, they challenged how we did it for the broadcast services, cable services, and so forth. And it was held in court that we weren't calculating them right. So the forfeitures issued during that period of time were rescinded and just pulled back. So there were a number of people that got them, and they haven't paid them, but they're not legally obligated to pay them because we had miscalculated. That was a dark time for us, but it had a much better benefit afterwards, because when we did recalculate the forfeitures the way they were supposed to be calculated, they were much higher. Congress mandated these forfeitures, so you went from an unlicensed forfeiture of, I guess, $1,000 or $1,200, somewhere along in there. Unlicensed operation is $7,500 today. That's the way they want us to calculate them. Well, somebody's got to do it, so we'll do that. If they want $7,500, that's what we'll do. And before we do this in a given jurisdiction, we'll work ahead of time with the U.S. attorney to make sure that we have support when it comes to collection time, because issuing a forfeiture means nothing if you're not going to try to collect it. And the U.S. attorneys like these cases. It's a little different work for them. And some of the bigger jurisdictions, such as Los Angeles, they want higher amounts to deal with, but there are usually ways we can work with them on that.
You're in the middle of the first Dayton Hamvention talk that former FCC Special Enforcement Counsel Riley Hollingsworth, K4RH, gave at the 1999 Dayton Hamvention. We'll conclude this RAIN replay from almost 20 years ago in a moment. The RAIN Report can be streamed and downloaded from the RAINReport.com, now tablet and mobile friendly, from Twitter at the RAIN Report, and via iTunes. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The RAIN Report from www.therainreport.com.
Under Section 308B of the Act, that gives us the authority to ask you questions about an application that you filed or about the station that you're operating. It's the most powerful section that we have in the Act, because if you don't tell us the truth, if you misrepresent, then there's a long series of cases showing that's an automatic basis for revocation. So, and commercial people have found this out the hard way many times in letters that they'd respond to asking about their loading records or construction dates and so forth. We can do and have done a number of recalls, calling people in for testing. We don't look at it as a punitive thing, but if the on-the-air conduct is such that it sort of appears that a few chapters might have been missing out of the study guide, we'll recall you. And I won't say lots of other circumstances, but I'll give you some prominent examples of things that led to a recall. Going from zero to extra and then asking what was a dipole antenna over the air. That'll do it almost every time. Here's one that will get our attention. Bragging on 20 meters about having bought your license in New York City. That'll do it. Getting a code test exemption from a podiatrist. That's my personal favorite. And I saw some of those leg keyers that were for sale out there. And maybe it's tied into that. I don't know. If a person that gets a test in order to be retested, we can't do it to somebody who took the test at the FCC. We can only do it to someone who's taken a test from a volunteer examiner. And then when that's done, we will tell you in the letter what elements we want you to retake. And the rule is very simple and it's very strong. We can have you take it with another VE or at an FCC office, and if you don't show up, the license is canceled. Now, there are some people that say, well, I'm not going to show up, but I'm going to wait 2 or 3 months and just take it through a VE and get it through again. It won't work because we watch that name and call sign and area that you live in, because we're expecting that if you don't show up, you may do that. Other things that we recall for, it's a case-by-case basis, but we mainly do it on complaints of the examiners or especially other test takers in that session. You've seen some recall notices, but you don't have to be concerned that we're going to do random or across the board or sampling calls for retesting. We're not going to do that because we know you work hard to get these licenses and we want to have a good reason to do it. Now, if you call us back when you get the retest notice, as one fellow did the other day, and said you can take your, I said this, hope you weren't in the session yesterday, but he said you can take your notice and stuff it where the sun never shines, I ain't coming in. Well, we like those cases because that's a very easy case. His license gets canceled, we go on to the next case. So that it doesn't hurt our feelings. We're pretty thick-skinned. So, and the best way to watch what is going on in the FCC is not through public notices or news items, because we found that it's a fairly narrow group of people that get those. We have 5 basic sources, and that's the League magazine and website, CQ and CQVHF magazine, the W5YI reports that we send to Fred, the RAIN reports that Hap Holly does, and Bill Pasternak's Newsline. Now, lots of other publications, World Radio is what I should mention, World Radio. Other publications pick those up from those publications, I guess, by agreement. But that's the best way, and not even on the FCC's own website. There's a lot of stuff on our website. It gets bigger every week, and we don't want to clutter that up. So this has been working very well with getting the word out. I noticed that if we issue a letter in the morning, usually by late that afternoon or the next day, I'm getting calls on it. Our theory on making the letters available to these people who publish them is that technically it's available through the Freedom of Information Act, if it isn't public information already. We want to get these names out so their peers can see what's going on with who, and that's been a great help in enforcement, is having the publicity that we've had. And finally, I would just say that when you hear these bad operators on, don't talk to them. You can try to correct them within reason once or twice. Maybe you can try to reason with them. But basically, if you don't get anywhere immediately doing that, just shun them and don't engage them and don't talk to them. Then if they keep on doing that, then they're broadcasting and it makes it much easier for us to get in. But don't get in conversations with them, to argue with them. In a lot of these cases, they don't care about reason. They just want to argue and they want to provoke. There would be disc jockeys. There would be meet the press hosts. They maybe wish they could be a Jerry Springer, and they're not. And so they're taking it to the handband. So just don't give them a forum. In Pennsylvania, the Amish have a punishment called shunning. And that is apparently very effective, and that's what we're going to have to do. And again, I would challenge every one of you. A guy came in here when we first walked up from Shelby, North Carolina, and asked me if I would come to the Shelby Ham Fest, and I said I would. That was the very first Ham Fest I ever went to. It was in 1959, and I remembered sitting here that a guy named Morris Hall, W4CXO, was an amateur extra class in town, took me to Shelby because he had heard that. He didn't know me, but he'd heard that I was interested in amateur radio, and I was 13 years old, and I was thinking, now, at this age, I know he gave up a whole day to do that, and I don't know if I'd want to do that. You know, you're taking a 13-year-old on a 150-mile round trip. You're going to get dozens of questions on the way, dozens of questions while you're there. Got to keep them in your sight there while you're there. You can't stop and drink beer on the way home. He's going to ask you questions all the way home. The guy gave up a whole afternoon for somebody that he didn't know. But because of that, I got into ham radio, and it changed my life, and that's what we have to do. I would challenge every one of you to recruit one new person into the service or help one person upgrade. And if I see you next year, let's talk about that and see how it worked and see where we go from there. But I appreciate all your support. The complaints that you send in have been great. And I would just say be specific as you can and try not to complain about a one-time situation unless it's really a humdinger. Give us as much facts as you can. If it's a repeater case, try to do a little bit of the basic legwork and give us a few suspects. And we can usually, or at least we've had very good luck, running it down from there. Beyond that, have fun at the flea market, and thank you very much for inviting me.
And that concludes the first of what would be a handful of talks given by the very eloquent FCC Special Enforcement Counsel, Riley Hollingsworth, K4RH, delivered at the 1999 Dayton Hamvention. Editorial note. It is to be noted here that Riley's successor, Laura Smith, has been conspicuous by her absence from the Hamvention in recent years. In fact, the FCC was a no-show at the 2016 Hamvention. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2017 Rain. All rights are reserved. Now for Rain's founder-producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com, at The Rain Report on Twitter, and via iTunes. Keep on hamming!